Bitch, go ahead and sniff what you want. There's plenty more to snort. I had an outstanding warrant for a short. Turn myself in, rocking Louis and all my jewelry. I wore to court.
Not to sound corny, but this podcast thing is really helping me, man. I felt very alone for a long time. And maybe that's something that will change through this. Maybe it'll, as I think you said it, it'll help other people come out and put their stories out there, because that helps me. When I can hear someone else talking that real shit, saying those little details that only me and you know, you know what I mean? It sparks something in me. I can see that you've been there. I can see that you've done it. I it means more to me. It makes me want to be more open with my side of it.
To Kick Cage.
Again, on another episode of the Kick Cage, and we are very blessed to have with us one third of the Hard to Kill podcast. Nick, pleasure to meet you, sir. How are you?
Good, brother. Good. I appreciate you having me on, my friend.
Well, that's the beauty about the veteran community, is we help each other. And I thought it was very fitting to have another veteran podcast on the show and strike up a bit of a conversation between ourselves.
Absolutely. We're losing more guys, you know, since we've been out than when we were in. And, you know, I'm sick of hearing that bad news. I'm sick of going to the funerals, and there's definitely conversations. We need to have these hard conversations. You know what I mean? And I don't know how long you've been doing your podcast, but I got to tell you, ever since I've been doing mine, I didn't realize how awesome I would feel after every one of these episodes, dude. Like, there's these therapists, these counselors, they can't touch the feeling that I feel after talking to just like a like-minded individual, someone that was there, someone that was in my shoes, someone that knows where I'm coming from. It's a feeling of comfortability you can't, you know, replicate with these people. And that's definitely something that I'm trying to preach on my end, because like yourself, I went through a bit of a depression, and you know, getting out of the military, I wasn't really prepared for. I didn't really understand what came with that. You know, I was young. I didn't really like listening to anybody either. I was, according to me, I was the toughest man in the world, and nothing like that could ever affect me. And I think the thing that struck me the most is I didn't really understand what I was going through while I was going through it. I couldn't put a name to it. I didn't really focus a lot on myself. I'm so used to having such like a high up tempo, you know, while you're in, you're used to, you know, being at such a high speed and operating at such a high caliber. You don't really have the time to sit back and look at yourself and be like, oh shit, you know, this is what I'm going through right now, and I'm not invincible. And yeah, I mean, tell me a little bit, are you starting to see that yourself, going through all these episodes, that they're kind of a form of therapy?
Definitely, without a doubt. Now, one of the reasons why I decided to start this was because I felt I was getting towards near the end of my journey, that I wanted to give something back. And the best way to give something back, you know, like you say, is talk to as many people as you can who've had these experiences. And yes, the more you talk to these people from across the globe, and you realize that, how these people went through exactly the same thing I was going through. They were thinking exactly the same thing I was thinking. If only I'd just talked about it at the time, then I wouldn't have been in such a mess in the situation that I was. So, yeah, I feel exactly the same. The more I talk to people and realize how we're absolutely the same, it just helps me. But hopefully it's helping somebody that's watching or listening to the podcast as well, which if it reaches out and just helps one person, I will feel accomplished.
Exactly. That's all I care about as well, for sure.
So you alluded yourself that you struggled coming out of the military. What aspects did you particularly struggle with as you were leaving?
It was really a form of not, for the first time, I couldn't really fit in. I felt like a recluse, and I've always been kind of extroverted. I've always been, you know, the one to go out with friends, have a great time, and be able to enjoy myself. And for the first time, all of a sudden, I'm not leaving my apartment. I'm not leaving my room. I'm not enjoying myself like I used to. And I could clearly feel that there was something wrong. I wasn't, you know, operating like I used to. I could tell that there was something, you know, different. And as I said before, I didn't really know what that was. I've never really dove into that stuff. I've never really self-reflected. And yeah, that's what I'm, I think a lot of this journey is being able to look inside yourself and be like, this is wrong, and this is how I need to fix it. And it's not the easiest thing to do, man. It's it's not easy to look in at yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, this is what you're doing wrong. I can be a stubborn individual, and but I think fitting in, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint one thing, but PTSD was definitely affecting me. And people around me were noticing it, my family specifically. And, that's something that a lot of people don't understand. PTSD doesn't just affect us, but it hits our family hard too. I have a very, tight knit family who I'm very close to, and, it was hard for them to deal with. And, I kept trying to hold on to the, I'm tough. I can deal with this. I don't need to address it. I don't need to go to these groups. I don't need to go get help. And it really started, you know, overflowing at a certain point. And, you know, I really dove in head first to the VA, to some of these outlets that are there to help. And unfortunately, what I realized was, sadly, to me, this is just my experience. I know that other people have different experiences, you know, around the world, just from talking with vets. You know, some of them have great VAs, some of them don't. But with my experience, it really seemed like these people didn't understand PTSD. And if you're any type of person that I like to think that I have common sense and I can read between the lines with certain things, when you become aware of that, when you become aware that, you know, this person I'm talking to doesn't know anything more than I do. And I almost felt like a guinea pig to a certain degree. I mean, when I first got diagnosed with PTSD, I was still in the Marine Corps, and they brought me to this program. It was called Co-Occurring. And it was in the Walter Reed Medical Center in Virginia, the DC area. And something that was good about the program, there was a lot of that I liked about it. There was a lot of individuals that come from combat backgrounds, which, you know, was definitely something that made me comfortable in the program. But they definitely over-medicated. They kind of threw everything at it. And I'm not someone that really comes from taking medications on the regular. The antidepressants really kind of scared me. I was on a few different ones, man. I can name four or five off the top of my head at once that I was on. And, you know, when you really start to see your personality change and you doing different things on the regular, it's scary. It really is. When you start to see yourself change, not for the better either. I mean, I kind of felt like a zombie for a while, and it was scary for me, because at that point I really started to become aware that there was a serious issue going on.
Just going to circle back onto something. Obviously, you call it PTSD. Now, something I want to throw into the mix here is not calling it PTSD. PTSI, call it a post-traumatic stress injury, or just post-traumatic stress. I'm trying to get British Mental Health Association to try and drop the use of the word disorder, because I'm believing that it causes some sort of stigma, you know, especially when you've got alpha male type who's perhaps been SF or served quite heavily in the military. They're going to feel less of a man when they hear the word disorder, I feel. And I think if we start talking about it as an injury, and, you know, it's an unseen injury, it's a mental injury from something they experienced or witnessed, then maybe we'll start talking about it more openly and we'll start having more conversations and it becomes more of an accepted injury.
I never really thought about it like that, man, but I can definitely rock with that. Okay. So you refer to it as PTS?
Just playing PTS. Try and categorize it as an injury rather than a disorder, to try and just drop some of that stigma to make it easier for veterans and service personnel to talk about it, perhaps.
Okay. Awesome. Well, all right.
How do you feel about that, describing it that way?
I have no qualms with that, my friend. I never really, personally, I could give a fuck less what they call it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't care what you think or the other person thinks. I kind of just, but I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And I can definitely appreciate that. And, you know, if that's something that as a veteran community, we all can get behind, I can rock with it. So
yeah,
absolutely.
I think the biggest thing that holds us back is stigma. And I think if we can just break down the walls that are creating that stigma, then I think we're all going to be the better for it.
What was the time frame that you served in, if you don't mind me asking?
It was, I originally signed up in 99. So I never saw any combat action for the war in terror. And then obviously I signed up again quite recently. So
you
definitely not been in your shoes.
I can definitely see though that you come from the generation that was kind of like the old heads, the guys that didn't really recognize mental illness. You know, it wasn't something that was really talked about that, you know, it was just change your socks and take an ibuprofen and get the fuck back out there. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah. The time when I first served compared to now is two different worlds. Sort of late 90s, early 2000s, when I first signed up, it was an incredibly masculine, male, dominating environment where any sign of weakness was just such a no-no.
Yep.
But now there is a slightly fluffy element to it, which somehow strangely makes me feel uncomfortable.
You know, I felt that way for a while too, but as I said, I did the groups, man.
Yeah.
I did the meetings with the therapists. I've seen this thing come full circle. Okay. Yeah. And when I bring up that old mindset, I know a lot of those individuals. A lot of them trained me. A lot of them told me about Iraq, about, you know, the first invasions and all that, and kind of schooled me up of how to be. But when I say it came full circle, a lot of those guys are now a statistic, unfortunately. Yeah. A lot of those guys didn't talk about it. And unfortunately, they're no longer with us because of the suicide numbers. And that's something that really scared me. I come from a generation that was able to see that a little bit. And I could, you know, at least seeing that made me want to go get help and be open more. It made me want to be real about it. It made me want to talk about it, because I clearly that wasn't working. The tough guy thing wasn't really working anymore. Yeah. And, you know, it's PTS is a real thing. It's something that's really affecting us. And I really think that through podcasts like this, we're going to be able to at least spread awareness to a certain degree. I think that's the first start of it.
Yeah.
Is at least getting the public to understand us a little bit more, to see the things that we're going through. And once people start recognizing that, it can go to the next level where, you know, it gets addressed in the medical community a little bit differently. And I really think the first start at that is getting people like ourselves that have walked in these shoes, man, that understand this disorder or whatever you want to call it. And it's not that we know everything about it or know how to deal with it, but where we can talk about it, we can give examples of what we've been through. And I always look at it from my point of view, if I was dealing with it, and I know that if I had a counselor or a therapist that did something similar to me, I'd be much more open to talking, to taking their advice, to, you know, listening to their examples, because it just means a lot more coming from, you know, someone that's done it to me.
I completely understand that. I one of the things I found, the person I was before my depression, before my PTS, before those attempted suicides, I would say that I'm not that person now. There was a change where I became that dark person and I went down that path. However, I look in the mirror and I think, I'm still not the person I was before all that. I'm somebody completely different. I've evolved and hopefully slightly more resilient and not going to fall down that dark path that I did before.
What would, if you don't mind me asking, what would you attribute that to, man? What do you think really, really helped you?
What really helped? First of all, accepting to myself, looking at myself and going, there is something completely wrong. Everything I'm doing is just so out of character. What the direction my life has turned is not where I want it to be. It's not who I am. Thankfully, I think COVID and lockdown helped me for some strange reason. Being isolated, being on my own on a farm with a 6-acre field and just me, somehow allowed me to just decompartmentalize everything that was in my head while I was spending time on my own. And for some reason, I just managed to realize who I was supposed to be again. I know it's strange, sometimes isolation doesn't help people, but in my case, being isolated and be alone with my thoughts, for some reason, I managed to turn it full circle.
I can understand that completely, man. I think when you take that time, and I think that's what COVID really did, man. It allowed us to not really worry about anything else but ourselves, because we were so worried about getting COVID. It gave us that time to just sit and just, you know, address all the things that we had that were kind of went on the back burner while we worked, while we lived life, you know. And I think for us veterans, that's something that definitely that helped us for sure.
And what was it that you found on your turning point?
Brother, I'm still going through it, man.
Yeah.
I'm by no means am I cured. You know, I still have my bad days. And not to sound corny, but this podcast thing is really helping me, man. I felt very alone for a long time.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that will change through this. Maybe it'll, as I think you said it, it'll help other people come out and put their stories out there, because that helps me.
Yeah.
When I can hear someone else talking that real shit, saying those little details that only me and you know, yeah. You know what I mean? It sparks something in me. I can see that you've been there. I can see that you've done it. It means more to me. It makes me want to be more open with my side of things, because it's not easy, man.
No.
It's not getting easy on these platforms, knowing that thousands of people are going to judge us, you know, and it's really easy to get behind a keyboard and just comment on shit. You know what I'm saying? But it's not easy to get on here and put yourself completely out there. And I'm starting to see that just being 100% honest with myself and being real about the things that we're going through, real people notice it. And it goes a long way, man. It really does.
I think one of the things that I probably learned as well, I know you said that, you know, you're still on that journey and you have bad days. One of the things I've definitely accepted is that I will still continue to have a bad day. And no matter what, I will still have bad days. Now, I'll realize it will be just that day. I know the next day will be better. And one of the things that another veteran told me that actually helps is when somebody asks you how you are, one of the best things, you know, a veteran will say is, oh, living the dream. You know, sugarcoating
how you are. That's typical, right?
Yeah, living the dream. Now, if we just put a number to how we're feeling, so we don't have to explain anything, you know, 1 to 10, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I'm having a 4 or a 5, you know, possibly a 6. we just leave the conversation as that. But I know tomorrow it's going to be a 7, 8, or even 9. That's one of the things that I've had to learn to realize is that bad day isn't going to last.
I hear that. I get that. Day by day is definitely the thing that's I can attribute some of my success towards, not worrying about, you know, everything in the grand scheme of things, just worrying about our 24 hours. You know, that's definitely brought the stresses down for me. Yeah. But it's hard to just attribute success to just one thing. I think there's just so many things that really go into this. It's I don't know. It's kind of similar to boot camp in a certain degree. It's breaking yourself back down, yeah. Understanding what causes certain things and building yourself back up, you know, properly. Yeah. It's weird. Cause whenever I talk about this, my leg starts going, I start getting a
bit twitchy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's because this means something to me, man. Yeah. It's, as you said, I mean, you got close to that final hour. And yeah. I think when you really do,
yeah.
It's hard to find the right adjectives to describe it because it's a very intense moment. And you know it, you can feel it. It's a feeling in your stomach, that little thing, that little voice inside your head that tells you all the right shit that you never listen to. It starts flashing on you. And yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but I think that's me just trying to tell you, I know where you're coming from, man. Yeah. I can know how hard that can be. And once again, this journey isn't easy.
No,
it's really not. But go ahead.
Going through your podcast then, how was your first episode? Because obviously I was very fortunate that the first episode that I did was a current serving personnel who is a very good friend of mine. So I found it very comfortable doing the first interview, and he suffers with a TBI. So doing that first episode with somebody that I'm quite close to, I found very easy. But obviously, you know, as you said, laying ourselves bare out there on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast, it's, you know, a testing time for somebody that's got, you know, depression, PTS, and recovering. So how did you feel with your first episode going out, and how did you feel while you were interviewing the first person?
I didn't realize that I was going to do this, bro. I don't even know how it started, but I kind of got my first step into this with I was on the Soft White Underbelly. It's a pretty big platform on YouTube, but so I'll tell you how this went. And this is just my opinion. I know other people feel differently about things. I'm not here to argue. I'm just giving you how I feel about this. Yeah. So I got into it. I got into the Soft White Underbelly. It's very interesting. I think him showing every aspect of life. I hate how Instagram only shows the, you know, the perfect times, the happy yeah. times. His interviews show really what's going on in the world to a certain degree. No filter, if you will. And I got into his podcast, and he started bringing war veterans onto his show. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a couple of them were definitely bullshitting. And that strikes a certain chord in me. I really, really don't like that. I mean, con artists is a hustle, but just keep it away from war veterans, man. I mean, I can't knock anybody, but just keep it away from that. Like this means a lot to us. A lot of us have lost friends. This means a lot more, to us. A lot of us bled behind this, you know, and, so yeah, Stolen Valor really isn't something that I rock with. And when I see something like that, it angers me, and I tend to get in my feelings a little bit. I think I left a comment on one of his videos, and I just told him, I was like, hey man, you need to kind of do a background check on some of these guys you're putting on, because I don't think that everything that they're saying is factual, or, you know, a lot of their stuff doesn't line up. As I said, it's all about the details with guys like us. And when you hear certain things, it's like, I don't think that's true. So I sent him a little comment, and surprisingly enough, he hit me back. He's like, yeah, you think you can do better? Send me something. I was like, okay. And, I did. I sent him a 15 minute blurb of me outside rambling about a mission I was on, or a firefight we had got into. And keep in mind, I'm not the luckiest guy. I've had something I can attribute to myself is I'm very good. I can pick myself back up and keep going. But I've had a tough go of this, my friends. Yeah. And, but he hit me back right away. And, he's like, I'd love to interview you. You know, I'm going to be in New York, in a couple of weeks. You're in Boston. I'll take care of you with whatever you need to come down. I'd love to talk to you. And I got ballsy enough, and, I went down there, and, it was not easy.
No,
Dan, it wasn't something that, I'm sure you know it. I mean, you know the feeling, how nervous it is just getting on a platform like this and talking about yourself for the whole world to see.
Yeah.
And he has quite a large platform, but lucky for me is I get very passionate about this stuff, because I almost died. I came very close to dying multiple times. And thank God, thanks someone, I'm still here. I got someone up there that's watching out for me. But it's when I get passionate about something, it's kind of easy to talk about it. I kind of tune out the whole world, because it's just this camera. It's just me and you talking here. I don't see the people in the comments. You know what I mean? So really, fuck them. I know that what I'm saying is the truth, and I know what I went through is real. So if it can help somebody out there, you know, whatever. If you don't like it, fine. You watch something else. But yeah, I got on his platform. I told my stories. I told him about growing up a little bit. I told him a couple of war stories, and it seemed like it went well. And I got a lot of, and you know, I thought I was just gonna get feedback from the veteran community, and it really was a lot of veterans' parents, a lot of wives, a lot of people in the background that have someone directly in their lives that's a veteran, and it's hard to talk to them. It's hard to get that stuff out of them. So a lot of people said that, you know, I'd do well helping vets in some, you know, capacity. And, you know, I sat down with a good buddy of mine. So the person I do the podcast with, his name is Mike Arbogast. We joined the Marines together on the buddy program. Yeah. So, you know, he's a stubborn fucker. And I've been telling him for years, because, you know, whenever we have a couple of beers, we, you know, we sit down by the fire, we always have just really real conversations. And I don't come from a military family. It's not easy to tell these stories to anyone. So they do get, you know, cramped up in us after a while. But when you're around someone you trust, and someone that you can talk about, once you have a couple of beers or once you get comfortable, the stories come out and you start talking about these things. And just hearing about us tell these stories, I was just thinking to myself, like, I would listen to that. I would love to hear something like that, you know, because I had just been getting into podcasts, but I would love to hear something like that. I could get into that. And I was like, Mike, we gotta sit down and start doing this. And, you know, we did. And it's been going really well. I'm taking this as a form of therapy, Dan. And I, as I said to you before, I've done the groups, but the groups have been very difficult for me. I've tried working with the VA, and I'm not by no means knocking the VA. They've helped me tremendously. They've given me a lot. I appreciate them, but you know, I think at the end of the day, PTSD, TBI, these things are not easy to treat. These things are not easy to take care of. We're not easy people to deal with at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And hats off to a lot of these poor girls that have been stuck in a room listening to me. And, you know, it's a real feeling when you tell a therapist a story or something like that and they start crying, or you go through a few therapists, you know what I mean? Like it tells you a little something about yourself. Mm-hmm. So the podcast is definitely a form of therapy. I get a lot out of it. My buddy Mike gets a lot out of it. And every podcast we do, 5, 6, 7 veterans come out of the cut, come out of nowhere. Hey, love what you're doing. Yeah. Appreciate you. And that right there, that's all I need. That's all I'm doing it for. And it means the world to me. Sorry, I'm kind of on a soapbox right now. Tell me a little.
That's
chip in a little bit, man. Come on.
No, I'm more than happy to listen to you. I think what you're saying is right. As soon as you're finding a platform and you're able to share your experiences, and it's resonating with people, especially like you're saying with, you know, the wives, the girlfriends, the parents of veterans, because they get, you know, secondary PTS from having to walk on with the eggshell syndrome, because they don't want to trigger that person. Because obviously, you know, we don't see it ourselves, but we suddenly become very short tempered, very snappy, very aggressive, you know, mood swings, flip a coin and, you know, pick a mood. So our relatives, our other halves are walking on eggshells, you know, making sure that they don't trigger us. So for them to be able to have somebody to talk to listen to as well, to have advice on how to approach us, fantastic. So it's a double-pronged attack, really, isn't it? You know, you're helping the veteran, but you're also helping the relative. So that's absolutely fantastic.
So what's, if you don't mind me asking, what's it like out by you? So how does that work? Do you have VAs or how?
Well, we don't have VA. We don't have a Veterans Association. We have like the British Legion. You see, I've always thought the Americans do it slightly better with the veterans. With British veterans, I feel almost pushed to the wayside if they don't seek the help themselves. My personal opinion is they get pushed to the wayside. Now, yes, we have, you know, therapists, we have psychologists, you know, that you can go see and talk to, but we don't have that separation between the NHS and something for veterans. So you got the national health and that's it. So you sort of bungled in with all the civvies.
That just can't happen. It won't work.
No. So you sort of bungled in with the civvies and you're all painted with the same brush.
Yep. I understand that completely.
Which is one of the reasons why I like talking to the American veterans, because I feel that, number one, the veteran community in the US seems to be so much better than the one in the UK.
When you say better, does it seem like you guys just don't really...
We don't seem to
come together.
Yeah. We don't seem to connect as much. We don't give, like, to the SF veterans, like, celebrity status to the, like you do with the US veterans. Say, you know, speaking to like Eddie Penny, Eddie Gallagher,
Savages. Big fans of both those guys.
I spoke to both of them. Absolutely fantastic. Yep, fantastic people. Mm-hmm. You know, Brad Thomas.
I saw Cody Alford up here too. Oh, yeah, you got some awesome guys coming up here, dude.
Yeah, Cody Alford. I mean, that guy is just so switched on. Now to be able to have that caliber in the UK, I mean, I could name a handful. You know, Jason Fox, who I'd absolutely love to get on the show and speak with him. You know, Christine Craighead, again, somebody else who's started to champion veterans' mental health with a short video he did. Now, there's a handful of British compared to a plethora of US veterans that's got that sort of status and that's got that sort of clout to be able to have a soapbox and reach the thousands, the millions, to be able to say, it's all right to talk like this. I think the US does it better than what the UK do. That's my personal.
That sucks opinion. Because honestly, you guys were right there with us. I mean, I serve with a bunch of you guys. So, I mean, once again, hopefully doing this stuff right here, it's going to be the start of it, man. I think we're really at the start of something that's going to, I can feel it growing day by day, just by people reaching out, connecting and talking. Once the stories start rolling, man, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger. I know it inside of myself, dude. Do you notice like a, I don't know, some form of pattern between like, the caliber of guys that you bring on here? Do you see just the type of individuals that they are similar, or I don't know, do you see disparities in them? Or
yeah, when they're at that certain level of the military, you know, Navy SEAL, MARSOC Raider, Delta Rangers, they seem to have very similar traits, especially when it comes to, you know, ignore and override to start off with. Then they realize there's a problem. Then the way they deal with it seems to be very similar.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if that's just because that's a characteristic of the type of person that obviously does very well in that military role, or it's just the way it is. I would imagine it's more to do with the characteristic of that person that goes very well in that military role. But yeah, there's very similarities, but you know, the destructive behavior, the drinking, the womanizing, the self-medication to make them feel better because they're ignoring the issue.
To me, it's just always staying operational, no matter what,
switched on all the time.
Yeah. I hear that.
And that's no way to live your life after the military, is it?
No, it's not.
Your mind's running at 1,000 miles an hour, your heart's racing all the time, hypervigilance, going into room, looking at exits, looking at the people around terrible. You.
It's so stressful.
Keeping your back to the wall.
Honestly, that's why I stopped going out, man.
Yeah.
I used to be a big, once again, I would go out to bars, I would go to clubs. I just realized they're not for me anymore. once you get arrested a couple of times, you go home with swollen knuckles, broken noses, you have to deal with the police. You start realizing that certain adjustments need to be made. That's what happened to me, man. When I first got out, I was just a absolute gladiator, and it's not sustainable in the slightest. So certain things have to change, man. And hopefully we're at the start of bringing awareness to this to a certain degree, and being the first to kind of come out and really champion having no stigma behind mental health and these mental illnesses that are clearly, you know, there's something behind them. Clearly just the numbers, you know, talk for themselves. I had an individual on my podcast 4 or 5 months ago, Captain Bodrog, infantry officer. And, He did a play recently, and it was called 22 a Day. I wasn't even aware of that at the time. I had no idea that I think it's even more right now that around 22 people a day, veterans, Marines, sailors, Army, are killing themselves. That's just too many people. Seriously, it's just. Something's not, there's a drop off somewhere. Something's not happening. And hopefully we can just through talking, do something to help that, you know?
I think one of the statistics I saw was 2012, the US lost more veterans to suicide than they did in Afghanistan that year. Wow. And I found that absolutely heartbreaking, to be
that
fair.
That is insane, dude. That's a big number.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully we're going to change that. Hopefully we're going to do something for that, man. And I really hope that talking through you and talking through other guys' platforms are going to be the start of it. So if you don't mind me asking, what do you think about current events? What do you think about wow. the things that are going on recently, man? I mean,
it's going down a dark road,
I know,
isn't it?
I know. It's scary. Because
I remember growing up in the 80s, we were, you know, still living through the Cold War. Because obviously that didn't finish till the early 90s. Mm. So I remember the Cold War and how we were with the USSR at the time.
What do you mean by that? How did that affect you guys over there?
Obviously in the early 80s, we were still... I remember, like, in the first years of primary school, still doing the flash, duck, and cover.
Okay.
yeah. I mean, that was only, like, in the first couple of years of primary school, so I'm showing my age a little bit there. that was early 80s. Gotcha. So there was still that fear that something might happen. Now, mm-hmm. I think, you know... We're not minutes to midnight anymore now. We're seconds, aren't we?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I recently interviewed a young kid who is from South America, South Africa. God, I keep exchanging those two. Stephen Prinsloo. And he is a private contractor on the front lines of Ukraine right now.
Wow.
And... the things that he's telling me are just shocking, man. Like the way combat's evolving, drones dropping ordnance.
Yeah, I've seen a few videos of that, and I just, it's not gentlemanly, is it? It's not.
Far from that, my friend. Yeah,
it's not war as we would sit down and discuss it.
That doesn't just seem like the Geneva Convention really applies out there to a certain degree.
I'm seeing those videos and the way those drones have been used. I think something needs to be drawn up in the Geneva Convention. It needs to be extended to the use of drones. Even I don't agree with the way they're being used.
There's a rumor going around right now that Putin isn't doing so well. And what does that mean ultimately? You know, that one could say that's not good.
My biggest concern was always that, you know, if he was facing a loss in Ukraine, would he just go fuck it, boom, and press the button? Because
he does have that personality, you know. I would hope not. I can't even imagine the repercussions of that. That is the last thing I want to, or I'm sure you want to, live through, having those flying.
Yeah. For me, it's also, you know, what's China going to do with Taiwan?
Exactly. Exactly. Have you looked into really what's going on there? Why is it happening? Is it the chips? Is it these things that they're manufacturing over there for a low, next to nothing?
It's the economy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look, every single war was fought over religion or economy or land, which near enough encompasses the other two, doesn't it?
Exactly.
I would, you know, putting a thinking man's hat on, this is purely for the economy. So, we're going to claim it back. It was ours. They went independent, but technically it's still ours.
Yeah.
Because they're doing very well. If it was just another island that was selling bananas, I don't think
they exactly really they wouldn't care. Yeah,
they wouldn't care at all. The amount of revenue that Taiwan must bring in through its technology must be phenomenal.
Exactly. Yeah, that's definitely the reason for that. I mean, the way that some generals are talking in the American military is they're planning for this in 27, 28, you know, there's carriers out there already. There's, I don't know, man. It doesn't look good. I hope it doesn't go that way. To me, it always kind of comes back to the military industrial complex as well.
Yeah.
What's really running this? You know, like what really is this? What was Afghanistan really? What was Iraq really? I mean, unfortunately, I ran across a few guys in Afghanistan that were, I'll talk about it, that were private contractors with their black flags, and they were mining lithium out there. Yeah. What does that mean? You know, that's clearly a play. That's clearly... Yeah.
I've heard that story. You're not the first person to mention that.
Not to get all conspiracy theorist on you. And what? I don't even think you can say a lot of these things are conspiracy theories anymore, man, because a lot of them came true. I think that's an easy out to not have a educated conversation about these things. Yeah. But, I mean, that was happening.
Just the same as we went in looking for weapons of mass destruction and found... nothing
at all.
It does lead you to question why we're going into this, but it's easy to question it when you're a civilian, but when obviously you're in the military, follow the last command. You just follow the last command, don't you?
It's a weird dynamic, because me and a buddy of mine that I served with, he's a doc, Dre, he deployed a couple of times with me, and we realized the thinking behind that, because you're trained to be this patriotic Marine, you know, and you want to protect your country. But when you start realizing that a lot of the things that your country are doing are, you know, not good, it's a difficult thing to deal with, because I don't know. This isn't easy to talk about. This is not an easy thing to address. But it's never easy to be a champion of your country through, you know, these colors, and then realize that in some capacities you're the bad guy. You know, and that took me a lot to deal with, because I've always been a patriot through and through. And I think it really wasn't about politics. It was really just about the guy next to you. That's really just what mattered to us, you know. And that's why we championed it so heavily, because it didn't really fucking matter what the politics were doing. Like, I'm getting my boys home, and we're coming home, and whatever's in our way, sorry.
Well, do you think that when you start leaving the military, you know, because you're not worrying about, you know, the person to the left and the right of you, these questions start coming in your mind of why did I do that? Why was I in this place? Why did I, you know, have to do these things? Because now it's suddenly not about the person to the left and the right of you. You're sat there reading a tabloid or watching the news, eating your breakfast, instead of being marched up and down a parade square or, you know, shipped off to wherever. You've suddenly now got this time to start thinking about it. And do you think that is possibly why? That's one of the biggest things that 100%. Probably we struggle with as we come out of the military.
Yep, 100%. It's very true. It's definitely a touchy thing to unpack. And I don't know, man. It's good to hear that other people think that way too, because I hate being just labeled as a conspiracy theorist or a unpatriotic person, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I went and fought for my country. So you can't really say that I'm that. I just think it's critical thinking. That's not something that was really allowed in the Marines. Critical thinking doesn't really apply. It's just do it. But once you start questioning things, and really looking behind everything and not just accepting everything that you're told. It gets iffy, you know, it gets creepy because you start realizing that money drives everything. I mean, we know this, but it literally drives everything. And unfortunately right now, the military industrial complex seems to be overcame by gigantic companies. They seem to be lobbying politicians that then wave their magic wand to get certain things done for these companies. And it just keeps on going.
Yeah.
The conflicts keep happening. The money keeps flowing.
Yeah,
it's tricky, man.
Because, of course, Ukraine, you know, is called the breadbasket of the world for the amount of grain it produces. Now, obviously, that is going to be high interest to the politicians of our great nations, isn't it?
Of course. Of course. You really got to look at what's being produced in these areas.
Yeah.
What's the biggest exports? You know, where's the money going? And the creepy thing for me, like, besides, you know, lithium in Afghanistan, what's their biggest export? Opium. Look at what's going on right now. Where is all that coming from? I mean, it's either coming from two places or three. Well, then again, two, because where's Mexico getting it? China, probably. So it's Afghan or China. And what does that ultimately mean? I mean, take it and run with it. I always say, do your own research. Yeah. And you always hit these walls that are like, this only could mean one of two things. And unfortunately, the latter isn't much better than, you know, the other way. So I don't know, man. Hopefully we can just stay focused on getting PTSD or PTS work through and leave this stuff to the big guys, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure whatever they decide and whatever happens in the future, you know, as long as they've got people in the military that, you know, look after the men, the left and the right of them, then that's all that matters for the guys like you and me that will have to go fight it for the politicians.
Facts. Yep. Someone's got to do it, and we know they're not going.
Well, no. But yeah, it'll be interesting times. But, you know, with NATO pushing as much military tech Ukraine's way, so it isn't technically as much NATO on the ground as possible without actually putting a single boot on That's the crazy. Ground. I know we've got some Ukrainians coming over here to train. So
how do you feel about that? I mean,
how do I feel about training them?
You gotta think that Putin's looking at this going nuts, being extremely aggravated about that. And I'm not over here waving Russia's flag.
No.
I'm just looking at this from an outside perspective.
Basically,
this is a proxy war.
We're
giving them resources. We're training them, you know, giving them tech, giving them weapons.
Yeah.
And really, that's the only way that they're hanging in there. I mean, I'm talking to the guys on the ground. Like, so unfortunately, this recently just happened. That gentleman I told you about that's in Ukraine.
Yeah.
He contacted me, I think, a couple weekends ago, and he was clearly stressed out. And he told me that they've been getting ambushed at night and they don't have NVGs. So Biden sending billions of dollars over there and these gentlemen don't have NVG. What does that mean? So where is that money going?
Yeah.
That's taxpayers' money. Going to what? Furnish someone's office or, you know, where's it going? I mean, if they don't have the gear, this can't all be going to weapons. This is billions, hundreds of billions of dollars.
And there needs to be some sort of accountability of where that money
is. There's clearly none.
Yeah.
I mean, let's remember who Ukraine was just a few years ago, one of the most corrupt places in the world. So, I don't know. I feel like things just happen so quick nowadays with social media, and there's just so much shit going on that there's never time to address the things that should be addressed or should be questioned. They just throw screen after screen in front of you. So you can't really keep up. You can't really, you know, stay focused on that one thing. And that's got to be a tactic at whoever's on the strings of this.
Of course, social media is without a doubt a weapon of war and
for sure.
a way of controlling the general mm-hmm. populace. If they want you to have an opinion about something, they will flood the news.
Yes, they will.
If they don't want you to know anything about it, you won't hear anything mm-hmm. about it.
You've noticed that. I'm happy to see that.
Especially with, you know, the war in Ukraine. If things are going well for the Ukrainians, boom, it's all over the BBC. Exactly. It's all over Sky News. Mm-hmm. If things aren't going well, you don't hear anything about it.
Do not. No.
And shocker. Something else will come on the news that we mm-hmm. want you to focus on this.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this. And we're not going to talk about China. We're going to talk about this.
So you come from a time that, you know, didn't have the internet, didn't have cell phones all the time. Do you remember how different it was? I mean, can you still remember that?
Yes. I remember having four channels on the TV, just four. I remember, how old was I when the first I got my
had
first
to be
mobile
early 2000s.
Phone. Well, I got my first mobile phone probably 1998.
You talking about the bag phone?
No.
Cell phone?
Actual cell phone. Great big Motorola that pulled the aerial out.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Monstrous thing. I thought I was amazing with that. The news was always in the newspaper. It was always what was on the news and conversation in a pub. That was how we heard about things. But to have, you know, something... you know, in the palm of your hand all the time, that's feeding you what somebody wants you to know.
Yep. It is a tool. It is a tool.
That is a tool of war.
And unfortunately, you see how easily the masses are influenced.
Yeah.
How trends happen by simple thing. And it's really scary if you look at it from just an outside perspective because, I mean, let's look at... look at Corona. Look how quick that came and just disappeared. When's the last time you really heard? Is it still bad out by you, or how is it still bumping over the news? And
no, I think the infection rates are about the same as what they were about a year ago. You know, people are still getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all
is
over
it
the
still
news?
Masks everywhere?
No masks, no social distancing, no nothing. It's we really need to get on with our lives now. So yeah, we'll just call it a flu. It's just another type of flu. We're just going to deal with it. You know, it's
a crazy time.
Yeah, I understand. You know, people died from it, but statistically, more people died from flu.
They did,
but nobody put that in the news.
No.
Nope. Nobody put that in the news that year on year more people die from influenza than they do from corona. But just to scare you a little bit, we're going to tell you these people died from corona.
I mean, who really made the most money during that? I mean, it had to be these.
Oh, Pfizer.
Pfizer, Moderna. Yeah. All these people that came up with the vaccines.
Yeah.
So if you know, switching gears a little bit. What's the next step for you? What do you see as goals for your podcast?
I would like to set up a non-profit, a charity where I was able to send British veterans over to the US to try herbal remedies for for mental illness and PTS, because we don't do anything like that in this country. You know, I was fascinated with veterans taking ayahuasca.
Have you tried?
No, I have not. No, it's something that isn't done in the UK. So to be able to set up a charity for veterans to go over to the US and, you know, do a proper monitored course.
Yeah.
With a professional.
Damn, that's huge.
That is what I'd like to achieve.
I really like that. That's awesome, man. So something that's being pushed right now in the US, actually, I don't know if you've heard of him, Nick Koumoulostos, no. Marine Raider, good friends with Cody Alford.
Right.
He has a podcast as well. I don't remember the name of it, but he was on my show a few months ago, and he talks about TRT, testosterone replacement therapy.
All right.
But I mean, this is something that helps. If you can get that energy up, you can get people in the gym, being physical, working out, being healthy ultimately. Because what does the gym promote, man? Healthy living. Things are going to get better slowly for you if you do it. So, you know, I definitely get behind that. I think there's something there. So, you know, there's definitely things that there's other ways to help PTS other than the conventional thing that's not working right now. And I think shrooms, ketamine, and ayahuasca are awesome. Hopefully through microdosing, that can definitely help a lot of these people.
Yeah.
For a while, what's cannabis out by you? Is that still very illegal?
Still very illegal.
Yeah.
Still very illegal.
Gotcha. So if you get caught like smoking or having weed on you, you're going to jail.
No. Well, depending on how much. I'm trying to scratch my head to think of the legalities. It's a Class C drug, so it would be confiscated off you. I know you'd be kicked out of the military. Mm. Probably most places of employment if you tested positive for it.
Not getting hired.
Certain amounts that wouldn't be classed as personal use, you'd get a good sentence for you know, the purpose of distribution. Mm. Because obviously in the US it's legalized in quite a few states now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I definitely think that's something that needs to be utilized through the VA, because I know that it helped me. And I know that when I drank like excessively every night, you know, it wasn't helping me. I became aggressive. I became sloppy. It hurt me. And I know that weed definitely helped me sleep. It helped my mood. Got me eating. It helped me ultimately. I think that's definitely something that could help or be a way to treat PTS. And you know, ultimately the way that they treated it from the beginning for me was throwing dangerous narcotics at it. You know, painkillers, SSRIs. I didn't even know half the things, mood stabilizers.
Yeah.
That stuff scares me, man. I really don't like hospitals now, just from experience I've been, you know, through treatment through the military. I really hope that within the next few years, treatment kind of improvises, adapts, and overcomes a lot of these, you know, obstacles that it's hit, and just gets streamlined a little bit and starts helping people like it should.
Well, fingers crossed. And I know one thing we'll probably do a little bit in the UK, CBD oils, which I know is derived from, I think that's more derived from hemp, which is a cannabis derivative, isn't it? But I know you can get gummings in the US can help.
Same here.
The same sort of effect. So maybe a bit of research for the UK to look into.
Something that I hope to eventually get to be able to do is I'd like to get some kind of center or something to just completely revolve around helping combat veterans or people. You know, I think it needs to stay with veterans.
Yeah,
honestly, I think if you keep veterans around each other and around like-minded people, that's where they thrive. So I think some kind of center for them, and use the ways that I have came across to help treat certain things, whether it's working out, eating healthy, trying ayahuasca, ketamine, and all these things. Just ultimately learning new things and becoming successful and just kind of changing up your mood a little bit, trying to put some of the bad things behind you and gain new skills and new things to focus on, yeah, other than just dwelling on the things that have, you know, ate you alive for the past couple of months since you got out of the military. And, you know, once again, a huge thing is keeping like-minded people around these people that are hurting. The people that will be helping people like us are people that have been in the military, guys that have been through this stuff. I really personally think there's something behind that, you know?
Well, fingers crossed. We're moving in the right direction, and hopefully, you know, like you say, podcasts like mine and yours and, you know, Sean Ryan's show and all the other great things out there that the veterans are doing, veteran startups, veteran businesses, mm-hmm, that are raising more and more awareness. So hopefully before Russia blows us up, we might actually get somewhere.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Well, Nick, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been convoluted and interesting. We've hit on some amazing subjects, and hopefully when somebody's listening to this, we can pick out some wonderful words of wisdom that hopefully the pair of us have shared.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you having me on, Dan, and hopefully in the future I can have you on mine and you can talk to the Hard to Kill boys. We'd love to put you through a few of our things and ask you some questions on our side of the fence. Absolutely. My friend. I wish you the best, and hope to talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you kindly. I'll speak to you soon.
All righty.
Cheers, Robert.